Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen.
And we welcome you to
Love Letters Live. And this is a show about just that, writing love letters. And as we say every week, to anyone for any reason at any time. And the variety is huge. It's just endless. We're surprised most weeks on this show that what the kinds of love letters people want to write.
Right, and we talk about it as a gift, not only to the person that receives it, but the person that writes it.
Yes, it's a chance to put your best self on paper and to do something wonderful for somebody else. So with that, I'm going to go right to our guest, and we'll just start your story. Richard Rubin is with us this morning. And Richard, I'm just going to turn this right over to you. Why don't you talk about any part of your life that has influenced you and that would lead to what you feel you want to do in a love letter?
Well, thank you both for having me on. This is such a great pleasure. You know, I've thought about what I might be talking about today before I got here. And I think that when one thinks through what has made their life interesting to themselves, they think about the people in their life who influence them. And clearly there are a couple of people that one can identify who play that role.
Would you like to say just who those are so we get a fuller picture?
Well, there's certainly my family, my immediate family, which happens to be five wonderful daughters, and of course my wife, Marcia. And then there are the people in my past, some of whom are no longer with me, and that would be my mother and my father.
Tell us about them.
I think I'm going to tell you mostly about my dad.
Where did you grow up, may I ask?
I grew up in Elizabeth, New Jersey.
And you have brothers and sisters?
I have a brother. He lives in Washington, D.C., is married, and he'll probably be interested in this program himself.
I'm sure. Okay, go ahead.
But in any case, you know, I thought about the fact that as one proceeds in life, they are influenced by forces that have long since left them in a direct sense. And that one of those forces was my father, who's now been gone 34 years.
Oh.
He left this earth at a fairly early age.
Sounds like it, yeah.
And he was a very, very interesting figure. So let me describe a little bit, because I think it'll help you to know what he's like, to
Please.
Know why I'm saying these things. My father came out of a very poor background in New York. He lived in a tenement in the Bronx, New York City, long way from here. And he was one of five children. And his father was a person he didn't know after he was 3 years old.
I'm sorry, say that again?
His dad was not anyone who stayed in the family.
Oh, I see.
And so by the time my father was 3 years old, his father was already gone from the scene. So essentially he grew up with his mom raising him, with whom he had a very strong and close relationship throughout his entire life. And I guess he was a person who, from a very early age, had great ambition and didn't really know the path to success. But in some fashion, he was able to find his way out of that small, dingy neighborhood that he lived in at the time. And he went to medical school and eventually became a physician.
How did he? Do you know how he did that?
Not easily. The fact is that he was a very intellectually smart guy. He did well in his classes, but he had to face a problem in his life which others themselves have often faced, and that was the fact that he happened to be of the Jewish faith.
Uh-huh.
And it sometimes occurs that, and I'm sure others have found this to be true as well, when you are trying to get somewhere and there are elements out there that want to oppose you, sometimes your religion is an element that works against you.
And in those days did. I mean, there were quotas and...
Uh-huh. It did. There were quotas, as we know them to be today. And I think he had some difficulty with that.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, he managed to overcome those problems, but not immediately. He ended up, after his college days, going to... when he applied to medical school, he was not immediately admitted. And it was his view that part of the reason was that there was a bias. But not wanting to hang around and just figure out what was going to happen, he went off to pharmacy school and became a pharmacist. And, you know, pharmacists are interesting people. They know a lot about things that all of us take and consume all the time.
Oh, you bet. Yes.
And he became a good pharmacist and learned pharmacology while he was waiting to be admitted. And then a long 7 years after that, he finally got into medical school. And he went to the University of Louisville, as it so happens, down in Kentucky. And he did very, very well, graduating the first in his class.
Wow.
Now, the fact is that when a person does that and strives to overcome the kind of shortcomings that he had to begin with, the adversity of his life, and then ends up at the top of the heap, they become very interesting people.
So that's a really interesting point. In what way?
Well, I think in everyone's life, be you a man or a woman, you have to figure out how you're going to divide your time between the people you love and the profession you love.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most difficult things, I think, and this is the case still today for physicians and other professionals and people in all walks of life, is that they have families they have to remember and they have to spend time with them. And in the old days, before the age of specialization, when doctors were general practitioners, which my father was,
mm-hmm.
They were out, delivering babies. And they were not in the house very much. And then they had to do rounds at hospitals. And then they had their own patient load to deal with. So my memories of my father were of a person who was not always...
Well, let me ask you something, because that's... You left out one thing that I'm interested in, which is at what point did you come into his life? I mean, you said there was 7 years between pharmacy school and medical school. Had he married during that time
yes.
or before? And when did you come along? And
he had previously married. He'd been married about 10 years before I came along.
Uh-huh.
And after he and my mother had met. And they had a very long and very fulfilling marriage.
Oh, that's nice.
But nevertheless, I don't think children were on his mind. And that kind of sets the stage for what I was going to talk about.
Okay.
I have a feeling that, in a way, I was an avocation for him, more so than something that he truly wanted to look forward to having. And the same would probably apply to my brother, to some lesser extent, who came 3 years after me. So my father, being a person who was always very challenged by his own workplace and wanted to move on to the next steps, was never satisfied with the fact that he had gained a certain level of attainment, was always looking to do the next thing.
And you could tell that as a child?
Young child, I wasn't aware of it. As I got older, I began to become aware of it. And then, more so when I became an adult, I realized what sacrifices he had actually made to advance himself. And I'll give you one very prime example of that. When he was at 52 years old, which would have been 19 years, 20 years before he actually passed away, he decided that he wanted to enter a different part of medicine. He wanted to learn how to become an eye surgeon. And going from general practice to becoming an eye surgeon is tantamount from, going from a teacher to becoming an engineer.
Sure.
It is it's a change of life. And he quit his practice, and he took his two children and his wife, and we moved here to California, which would have been in 1949.
And you were how old?
I was 9 years old.
So that's disruptive.
It was very disruptive. Mm-hmm. And although more so for him probably than for us, because we hadn't acquired any real allegiances at that point to schools or anything else. But when we got here, my father entered a residency and studied and became an eye doctor. Then he got cold feet because, realizing after he had acquired that credential that he might not be able to make a living at it here, he promptly picked up our family and he moved us back to New Jersey from where we were living. And he then reestablished himself as a general practitioner, and he did his eye practice on the side. So he was a man living in two medical worlds. Very few physicians at that time would do that. But if you think about it, that kind of pressure on a person is just overwhelming. And I believe that there was a cost to be paid, and the cost he had to pay was the amount of time he spent with family.
But it sounds like also he was the kind of person who had that pressure from within anyway.
Totally so. He was very self-motivated, and he wanted to do those things. And whether he had had children or not, I think he would have gone in that direction. But since there were kids around, and I was one of them, we were looking to find out, hey, where's Dad tonight?
So how did that...
Well, whenever he made his appearances, they were often moments where he was retelling the moments of the day which had been frustrating and challenging and difficult.
And that's what he told you
and
about.
That was your conversation. We heard those stories. Now, as kids are, we want a little attention paid to ourselves. Hey, Dad, what about us? And as the firstborn, I probably was a bit more guilty of that fact than my brother was, wanting someone to pay some attention to me. I think first kids have that syndrome. I don't know. In any case, what would happen is that I kind of felt left out of that heap. And I think as time proceeded, we developed a difficult sort of relationship with one another.
So how did you ask for, demand, or let it that attention, and what was his reaction?
Well, I think what happens is that you tend to act out in ways as that children do. And, I think he had very little patience for that. And while I was trying to seek his attention and his affection, mm-hmm. I wasn't getting either.
Were you doing it in negative ways or to get attention, or positive ways to get attention?
I was trying to figure out what way to do it, mm-hmm. and wasn't really sure how. And I think that what I succeeded in doing was getting him mad more of the time than anything else. I was kind of an unfortunate distraction in his life much of the time.
So how, when you say you got him mad, how did he show that? How did he react?
He would become verbally mm-hmm. somewhat, I don't want to use the word abusive.
Harsh.
But harsh uh-huh. is a good term to use. And it was definitely something I knew about. I mean, you could feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And I often remember that, we'd be at the dinner table and there would be an explosion. And I would find myself leaving the table and going off and sulking somewhere,
yeah.
hoping that it might blow over.
Who could blame you? Where was your mother in all this?
Well, she was there. Mm-hmm. But she didn't have all the weapons that she would have needed to stave off his kind of volcanic personality.
Yes.
And
or the confidence to do it like women have a little bit more today, I think.
Probably so. And I feel, and that is true. When you look back, and this is a different age.
Right.
My mother was an accomplished pianist. She had gone to Juilliard. She had done wonderful things in her life. But when she got married, all of those things fell by the wayside. And she basically became a nurse and a mother.
Oh, she actually did get a nursing credential?
No.
Oh.
She just was retained yeah. in his office for that purpose.
I see.
In fact, his office was in our home, which was another problem. There was no separation between workplace and home. And when we were sitting there, in one of our rooms, reading, listening to radio or TV or what we might be doing, next door there was a medical practice going mm-hmm. on. And his transition from one to the next was almost non-existent. So I think that had some...
Sure, there was no separation. For
yeah,
him.
Most families, you have that separation. Right. And I think it's good. I think you need to have that distancing between your workplace and the rest of your life. So many things were, I think, conspiring to make it a very difficult time for all of us. and now, more so for me, I guess, because I was sensitive to those facts.
Mm-hmm. More than your brother?
Well, my brother seemed to take a different point of view of all this. And if he were listening now, he'd say, no, I disagree with Richard.
Oh, okay.
And he would be in his rights in doing so.
Yes,
but
they say every child has a different set of parents.
Isn't that that's a great way to describe it, mm-hmm. Janet. And I do believe my brother found a different way out of the problem. He didn't confront him. I did.
Mm-hmm.
And so confrontation leads to more confrontation. And eventually, you have a psychological divide that develops, and that's a very difficult thing over life to change.
Mm-hmm.
But so we went through a very difficult patch. And as I grew older and then left home and went to school and college and this and that, the distancing that I felt had never been cured. It was, in fact, exacerbated because I was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I would come home from college, and I had gone to school in Ohio, and I would come back during the holidays, whatever, in the summers, I would try very hard to kind of reignite that relationship. And there was really none there to reignite.
Mm-hmm. That's so sad.
He remained the person he was mm-hmm. just about until the very end of his life. So thinking back, though, I started to feel that conditioning, while it had some very bad moments, also had some very powerfully important and good moments as it developed for me whatever I became in my own life.
Well, I was going to ask you, because I know your life is political
and
you're comfortable in that world and it makes sense to you. And I'm wondering if that early familiarity with confrontation is something that makes sense.
Interesting point.
For the positive as well as the negative.
Well, I never quite thought of it that way, but I guess I learned how to stand up for myself. And I think in politics, that's probably the first rule of politics. People are...
And to understand a relationship that is confrontational, as we see every time there's an election.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
but totally so. The adversarial relationship is completely
Oh,
natural.
And your law practice, adversarial.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, all of those things,
yeah.
I think, play into it. And so as life went on, I guess some of the skills that I developed defending myself against my father
yes.
became skills I could adapt and use in my later life.
Yes.
And I guess I ended up being able to do that. So now as I look backward on that period of my life, I miss him.
Oh, yes. I want to ask you about that because I think that, well, let's, do you want to just let
Sure, I'll just remind our listeners that this is Love Letters Live. We're here every week at this time. Hope you'll join us. We'll, later on the show, we'll tell you a little bit more about how to get in touch with us.
Thank you. So maybe this is a good point. If you say, I miss him, this is maybe a good point for me to ask who gets your love letter today.
Well, I think you know where this is probably going. I think I'm going to send it to my dad.
Okay.
And
write it to your dad.
It'll be written.
Yes.
I'm write it to my dad.
So what are the things that you would like him to know? Oh, no, we talk about a love letter. A good love letter is a good love letter. A great love letter is filled with specifics that you remember. You know, we always say, you're so special, just doesn't mean anything. Why and what? So what is it you like him to know that you remember now looking back and that you're aware of? And then what are the things you actually miss? So let's start to write those down.
Okay.
What are the three things or four or six or two that you would like him to know you were aware of that he might not ever know you were aware of, like his own upbringing? And
for one thing, I guess he needs to know that I didn't turn out all that bad.
Not by a long shot.
He may have had some apprehension growing up.
You think?
Interestingly enough, I had thought during an early period of my life I would be want to be a doctor. I'd want to follow in his footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that I thought about often was how daunting it would be to ever try to follow him into that profession. And I have a very, I have a feeling that I, for other reasons as well, since I don't think I had the skill set to do it, but that I could never have followed him there and become the, what he was, because he went right to the peak. He went to the pinnacle of his profession, and he was a very revered and valued person.
That's wonderful, though, that part. So do you think if you had surpassed him, you would have been angry at that?
Interestingly, could we have actually competed? I don't think so. I think he got a little, he mellowed a bit as he got older.
Oh.
And I'll bet as if he thought about it, which probably wasn't too often, he might have thought, gee whiz, maybe I could inherit that practice and follow him. But I think later on, he also valued the fact that I was going in different directions, even though that was never fully expressed. So when I began to look at pursuing a life in law and politics, government, and went in other directions, those were things that I think he would have found to be of interest later on. And he would have probably maybe a little bit sheepishly said, you know what, or grudgingly perhaps said, yeah, Richard, that's pretty good stuff. We never had that open conversation that I wished I could have had.
Mm-hmm.
So here I am today having it with you, Dad.
How nice. That's just really nice.
And I think it would have been nice to have had him around longer to have been able to sit here and to have had discussion.
Of course.
But now, of course, we will never have.
So what are some things that you'd like him to know? You know, you talked really sensitively and sweetly about the difficulty of his own upbringing. Did he know that you were aware of that?
I suspect that he was only marginally aware of that fact. Because I think, you know, when you're growing up in your own life, and now I've had children, and I have to keep reminding myself of what they need.
Mm-hmm.
I think as we grow up in our lives and we're completely absorbed in our own professional callings and what we're doing, we often forget that there are people around us who are looking for us to do something for them. I think he forgot that fact. And one of the things I think I brought out of our experience, which is something he needs to know now, is that I think I became a better father for it.
That you did?
I did.
Because of the negative lesson.
Yeah. Yes. I remember feeling long afterwards, after I got married and had children, that I was going to spend a little more time paying attention to their needs,
mm-hmm.
paying attention to what they wanted, making sure I was listening to them. I think if you were to ask my daughters today, they'd probably say, yeah, Dad's a pretty good listener. I hope they would. And I think part of the reason for that was that I came out of that experience with my father. And I guess those are a couple of things that in my mind stand out as lessons to be learned from the past.
How did you learn to be, this always kind of interests me, really, how did you learn to be the kind of man who was good for a woman in your life, when your father, through maybe no fault of his own, couldn't encourage your mother to continue with what she did well, and he, in fact, put her in kind of, it sounds like, a subservient position to him?
Well, I don't know if my sensitivity was gender-based so much as it was geared to the fact that when I had children, I knew I wanted to spend time with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew in my own heart that I wanted to have them know their father was a companion,
mm-hmm.
and I had missed that companionship. That was the part of that relationship that never existed. And I've kind of made it a point with my kids that we have to feel that way. We hope to be able to be that way with each other.
Now you're telling your father, you're writing to your father about your... Oh, so did he know your children? No.
Interesting. He knew my twins were the firstborn.
Yes, right.
And he knew them only very, very briefly. They actually... He died the 2 years after they were born. Excuse me. That is right. Yeah, 2 years after
when
they were born.
Uh-huh.
So he only actually got to see them once when we visited New Jersey, because by then I was living in California.
Uh-huh.
And
was he taken by them? Was he charmed? Was he?
He seemed to be very taken by them. He sort of had a grandfatherly reaction, but again, it was never developed because there was no time for that to happen.
And so then, your other daughters.
And my others never got to see him.
Right.
So it was a situation where. Had he been given more years, who knows? You might have turned into a pretty darn good grandfather.
Yes.
And that would have been wonderful because it would have had a way of reuniting the family.
Yes.
Which we never got to.
And given you a chance to see him differently. So what are the things you miss?
In terms of his not being here?
No. You said, now that I look back, I miss him.
Oh,
what do you miss?
Well, I miss the fact that the person who... played such a prominent role in your life, influenced so much of how you got here, mm-hmm. was not there to see you at in your maturity, where we could have had the chance to have these conversations,
mm-hmm.
where he and I would have had an opportunity to have spent time at a dinner table, gone out to a movie, gone to a baseball game, done stuff which we really never did.
Mm-hmm.
And those things maybe could have occurred. As he got into his later years, he had not in any way lessened his enthusiasm for his own work. So there was no real evidence that he was going to stop, doctoring until a very late age. So the chances for those things to happen were probably minimal. But I think they would have occurred. And another reason they would have occurred was that I came back and lived the dream that he always had, which was to come to California and stay here.
Uh-huh.
And that never got fulfilled. I think when he returned to New Jersey, our home state, to resume his practice, he missed out on one of the things he truly wanted.
So did he see himself in any way as having failed in some way for...
Yeah, I believe he did.
Oh. So with all that accomplishment, he still could see himself as having failed?
Yeah, with all that accomplishment, that was something that didn't happen. And it's funny, when you're a person as driven as some people are, as he was, things like that count.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he had aspired and achieved... the calling he wanted to. He never got to live back here in marvelous San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
where the middle part of his life had been spent.
So I have another question. Well, so what are the personal things you missed about him? His personal qualities, real specific things that, even though they didn't blossom into a full relationship, what were the sparks that you miss of his?
My father had a part of his personality which would come out sometime that had to do with a different part of his life that we as children, excuse me,
mm-hmm.
had to clear my throat.
Go ahead.
That we as children knew very little about. Right. But in his early middle years, he became interested in Hollywood and the theater.
Oh.
And it turns out that he teamed up with a couple of other doctors and some other people, and they invested some dollars in a couple of movies, actually, none of which your listeners will have heard of or probably ever
saw. Try him.
If he hollers, let him go was the name of one of those. See that? I told you. That actually, it was a movie with Barbara McNair and Raymond St. Jacques.
Uh-huh.
It was a movie in which, believe it or not, two black actors had the first almost all-nude scene in Hollywood. And the man who produced that picture is long gone.
Mm-hmm.
But my father was one of the people brought into that process, and he was went out to Hollywood a couple of times and watched the film being made.
So he had some kind of spark in there.
He had spark in him. There was an interest that developed later in his life in parts of what he wanted to see that was never there to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a procession of people, and movie actors and actresses, who had come through our house in New Jersey, who he had become acquainted with.
Mm-hmm.
when he was getting involved with this in the movie making business. And I remember Zsa Zsa Gabor showing up in our living room one day. I didn't know who Zsa Zsa was. I didn't know her from anybody else. But I was told by somebody, that's a very important actress. And there were others.
So he was able to fill your life with some glamour.
He did.
There in New Jersey.
Vicariously, he did.
Yes.
And we saw that happening. And I know my mother felt good about that because it opened up a new avenue for her, which had not existed.
Okay, so you've got a lot of things to say. Now, my question is, you can't send it to your father.
True.
Because you said before, I'm going to send it to my father. So I think you had your eye on the right. So you can write it to your father, but if you don't mail it and send it to somebody, it's not really a letter.
So it has to go to someone who
can
read
it. It has to go to somebody. Who can you send this to and make that person's life better? I mean, I'm thinking your daughters, I'm thinking your brother, as a way of, you know, this is your own history documented in your own hand.
That's scary, Janet.
It's wonderful. And when your grandchildren find it, your great-grandchildren will come across this yellowed thing in some drawer, they're going to know something really valuable about the human side of you.
Well, I want to know that I came to terms with my father at the end, after he was gone, and I feel that way today. And I guess the person who probably would benefit knowing that most, because my mother is also God, would be my brother.
Oh, your brother. Wait.
My mother.
Your mother is also. I was thinking your brother.
Yeah.
Yes.
So my brother Jim would probably, not that he hasn't heard me expound on these things before.
Different in writing.
But I think maybe I'll let him get the letter.
Okay, that's wonderful. Because, you know, when you put something in writing, it carries a different reality. That's why we have written contracts, right?
Yes, we do.
You know, verbal is good, but time can muddy the memory.
And it has already in some respects.
Yes, okay. So that's wonderful. Now,
so I'll send it off to him.
Okay, that's wonderful.
Just a quick question for you. How long did it take you to come to terms and come to this realization that you've just explained to us now?
Good
after
question.
After he passed away.
It was some period of time. It took a while. I had to work it through.
Mm-hmm. Like years?
Many years.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many years.
You have to hit a level of maturity yourself.
Yeah, you have to feel comfortable in your own self, and you have to feel a sense of your own security before you can get there.
And look back at him with some kind of sympathy for
what. That's exactly right. Yeah. You look back eventually and understand that he had anxieties, he had difficulties, he had challenges that he was concerned about that he felt he never met. And then it becomes, you put a human face on it, which is not just your father's face.
Yes.
But the face of people anywhere who know that they are striving.
Yes.
And overcoming great adversity.
And I would guess from just what you said that it's possible that he thought he was doing a really wonderful job at being a father because he was there. He didn't leave. He was accomplished. He provided for you.
I believe that would be true. And I believe he probably thought I wasn't very grateful for it.
From what he got, he was giving the world.
Yes.
So, you know, it's...
Yes,
yeah.
He was. And by the way, he did give the world a lot. His patience to the person, thought he was one of the greatest doctors.
That often happens.
And I'm sure it was true. He administered to their needs all the time. I would go with him on house calls, sitting in that old black Buick, and we'd drive around town, and I would end up sitting in the car while he was inside attending to a patient.
That's really worth talking about in a letter, because that's a really important memory that's to his credit, even though it didn't. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, that would be something we should mention.
Okay, so think about more of these specifics, and you sit down and write a letter. You get to rewrite it. You get to see if you got everything in.
I'm going to make sure I did that.
Okay.
And thank you for the time and opportunity to do this.
Well, Richard, and thank you for the lesson. Every single guest that we have teaches us something new. And
really.
Are you interested in what I picked up from your interview?
I'm sure I would be.
And that is the importance of revealing ourselves to our children and to those around us so that they can understand us and know where we're coming from while we're still here.
Hmm.
Yes. They shouldn't have to wait till you're gone to figure
really
it out.
That really is important,
exactly.
And I appreciate you pointing that out. Yeah. There's so much we want to say to people. We never get that chance.
Yes, and that's, you know, that's what Teresa and I talk about. Why take it to the grave? Doesn't serve anything.
Right. True. We got to have this happen in the here and now.
Yes.
Yes, so we can enjoy it.
And they'll enjoy it long after you're gone.
And
exactly so.
This was fabulous. Thank you so much. Just
thank you.
Want to take the last couple of minutes to remind our listeners, please join us every week at this time, and please get in touch with us. You can visit us on our website at www.loveletterslive.com. You can catch our past programs, and you can, if you have a story to tell, as Richard did, and a letter to write, please let us know. And if you're in the Bay Area, we'd love to have you on the show.
Wonderful. Thank you. So, just remember that if you think You need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter. Writing a love letter is a special occasion.
So until next week, with love from Teresa
and Janet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.